Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Inside College Soccer Podcast. We've got Erica with us today, back. I think this is the second one we've done on ours, although I've done a bunch on yours. How you doing, Erica?
I'm doing great. Excited to talk today.
Good. We got some good responses from the podcast that we did last week with Andre, yeah?
We did. Yeah. And then you have some people who leave hate comments and don't really understand the message, but I thought it was a good discussion and it kind of outlined all the nuances with playing top 25 Division One.
Yeah. What were some of the comments that we were getting that people didn't quite understand what the message was?
Yeah, I think there was one comment that they couldn't believe that coaches will watch one game at a showcase and the player had a bad day and then they just like move on and leave the game and don't look at the player again. And I'm like, well, these coaches have limited time and it's that cutthroat. I mean, they're only watching 10 to 15 minutes of some of these showcase games. So if you aren't on, if you aren't performing, because it really comes down to that, then tough luck. I mean, what do you expect these coaches to do?
Yeah, that's it's wild. Yeah, I mean, and isn't that the world of sports, right? If you're in the Super Bowl and you don't perform well and your team loses and then you don't get a contract renewed, what the team's supposed to give you another chance? I don't. Yeah. The pressure's on. That's part of sports, is competing under pressure, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, Don. And I think at that level, that caliber of college soccer, people have to understand that it is very high pressure and it's very cutthroat. And some people just aren't cut out for that environment, and some people thrive in that environment. So I'm glad we did the episode because I think it painted a realistic picture of that. And I think sometimes people are so attracted to top 25 D1, but they don't think through the pressure component and the mental health stuff that Andre touched on. You have to really expect it to be very hard on you. I just don't think people have these candid conversations enough.
Yeah, you know, you had a very interesting tweet this morning. I think you posted it this morning, and I'm going to read it real quick. And I wanted to get your thoughts into what went into it, what made you think of it, and then maybe we can expand on a little bit. The tweet was, snowplow parenting in sports needs to stop. There have been times when I've been the first person in a kid's life to call them out and tell them that what they're doing is wrong. They're floored when they were wrong for once, because they've always been told they were perfect. As a coach, it shouldn't be coming from me first. The kids should always be familiar with this. And it's stuff like not giving up, giving your best effort, being kind to others on the field, listening while the coach talks. They're floored when I pull them aside and tell them that they need to do these things. I don't know. I was like, what? Why are we surprised? But then maybe I'm just old and that's not what we're supposed to be doing nowadays. I don't know. What made you think of that? What kind of things do you see happening, and what advice would you give to parents?
Yeah, well, what inspired that was I saw one of my friends she's a soccer mom, a volleyball mom. Her kids are in multiple sports, and she runs a tight ship in her household. She's very disciplined with how she raises good humans, respectful humans, and her kids are just fantastic people. And I think they're like 7, 9, and 12. And they're just great kids. And they're the kids that you look at and they're like, wow, like everyone wants to be friends with that type of kid at school because they're so kind to others. They don't bully. Teachers love that type of kid. They show up on time. They do their homework. They ask questions. And I'm like, wow, like she's succeeded as a parent. But she shared a post today from, I think it was a school cop in the Tampa district at one of the middle schools. And he went on this long rant. He's like, I can't believe how disrespectful middle schoolers have gotten today. They're They're late for school, they're skipping class, they're getting in fights in school, they're disrespecting teachers and authority. And he was like, I've been a cop at a school for over 20 plus years, and I've never seen anything like this except in the past 3 to 5 years. And that's when I was like, wow, like I've kind of seen that too, in the past couple of years with some of the younger kids I coach, where they're very disrespectful in the first few sessions, whether it's being mean to other girls or giving up when we're running sprints and then pouting. And then when I pull them aside and call them out and say, you can't do that, that is wrong, they cry, they've never heard it before. And I was just fired up to share that because I think a lot of coaches and teachers and school cops feel this way because it's gotten so out of control that a lot of these kids aren't being taught right versus wrong. And they're also not being taught responsibility, discipline, how to respect authority and coaches and leadership. And yeah, it's just crazy that I have to be the first person in a kid's life. And I'm talking a sixth and seventh grader. They're a lot older. And I have to be the first person who says, you were wrong. You are not the best here. You are disrespecting me. I have been the first person to say it, which is not okay.
Yeah, and isn't that's what I mean, what do parents want out of sports if not for those things that you just listed? That list that you just went through is what's going to carry forward into life. I mean, the percentage of kids that are going to make that are going to be that are never going to have to work again in their life after their sports career because sports paid for it, because they made enough money. The amount of kids that that's going to be their life is somewhere between slim and none. It's an astronomically small number. So if we're not putting our kids in sports so that they can be taken care of financially for the rest of their life, then why are we putting them in? And for me and my kids, it was always that list that you laid out.
Yeah, and I think those are the things that kids should learn from sports. I mean, yes, they should learn it from their coach, but they shouldn't be hearing these things for the first time from their coach. And I think sometimes parents overlook, like, being good humans, and they're like, oh, we just want them to be the best at soccer. But just because you're the best doesn't mean you're the best teammate. You're the most respectful. Maybe you bully the other girls. So I think parents really need to think about these things and what else are we teaching our kids? And I think it was Dr. Jordan Peterson that said the amazing quote, don't let your kids turn into someone that you hate. And I
Wow.
think that's so powerful because, like I said, I mean, you want to have the kid that you obviously love. They're behaving in a way that is respectful. Obviously, they're not going to be perfect, but as long as they're receptive, they apologize, even just basic things like please and thank you. These are just basic, decent human things that I don't hear as much of anymore from young people. Just things like that, they just need to learn and just really thinking about, okay, does my kid get along with other kids? Are they loved by everyone and everyone wants to be around them? That's awesome. Like, that's an amazing accomplishment. And I think parents really need to think about that. And it's not me saying how to parent, it's just me saying we just need to teach young people how to be decent humans again.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Where do you think we went wrong? I mean, it wasn't, it was, there was a time in in my lifetime, and I'm not the youngest, but I'm not the oldest. I'm 62 this year. And but there was a time when we were growing up that look, if we came home complaining about a teacher or a coach, the first thing our parents said was, "What did you do wrong?" It was a And look, I mean, teachers weren't always perfect, and adults aren't always perfect, but it was the idea that adults have more experience than you, and they probably have your best interest at heart. And so, what did you do to cause that reaction? Where do you, because you work with a lot of kids, and you've done this for quite a while now, Erica. You're getting quite experienced at it. How many years now have you been out this
13.
working with kids?
13.
13 years. So yeah, where have you seen the change go wrong?
I think it's a multitude of factors, but I think the biggest one is that idea of the snowplow parent. just want to pave the way for their kid. They don't want their kid to have any obstacles or any failures or be told that they're wrong. They should always be told they're right, that they're perfect, that they're doing amazing. And I think part of that is parents just want to be their kid's best friend instead of the parent and the disciplinary. I think there's a balance between the two. And I think we just really need to come back to teaching right versus wrong and teaching that respect and that discipline. And I think it even goes into coaching too. It goes into us coaches calling things out immediately when a kid does something wrong and not ignoring it. So I think it's a lot of things. And I think people just don't want to offend people and everyone feels like they're walking on eggshells. And look, did I want to make some of my middle school girls cry when I told them they were wrong? No, I don't want to make anyone cry, but that's what happens when you tell someone, hey, you were wrong. You were not acting right in this session. And they've never heard that before. So of course they're going to cry. Did my heart rip into shreds when I saw a girl crying for me? Yes. But at the same time, I hope she learned a lesson on how to treat the other girls, how to show up to training early and make sure she's on time and ready to start. It's just, had I never had those conversations, then the behavior would never have changed. Even though it was a little uncomfortable for her at first, it paid off in the end. And I think that's another thing, is we have to allow these kids to feel uncomfortable at times, and we have to be really honest with them.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I'd like to transition that right into, and I've been talking a lot about this, and you have too, but this is the idea of being uncomfortable. And let's get into a little bit of, you know, what you really do for a living, which is sports, your sports performance specialist. And it's hard for us as people to make changes. I mean, they've done studies on this that people making changes in their life, and that includes our body changes, is the most uncomfortable thing that we can do, mentally uncomfortable, but also physically uncomfortable. And how do you help your students get over that hump of this hurts, it's painful mentally, physically, I don't want to do it? Because once you get over that hump, once you come past that mindset of it hurts and move into, oh, this is helpful, it helps me, it just feels better, I'm doing better, and it's in enjoying the pain, the mental pain, the physical pain, the suffering, and accepting that as just part of the process, then it's miraculous in what change can do for a person. How do you help your students get over that?
Well, Don, in the past 13 years, I've seen a lot, but what I can tell you is the soccer players who are the most consistent with the performance side of things, with speed, strength, and conditioning, are A, the athletes who grew up in a household. And again, this comes back to parenting. They grew up in a household where there was that love for movement and that just appreciation of living healthy and exercising and the importance of it. It was just a part of their house culture. So they had that many years before they even saw me. And then I also have athletes, maybe they didn't have that initially, but they eventually have just overall health as their deeper why. So yes, they want to get fast for soccer, they want to reduce injury, but they also just love strength training because they want to be healthy for life and they enjoy lifting weights and they have that deeper why. And it's really them who wants it, because I can explain to everyone the science of it, the injury reduction side and how it's going to help you, but you have to want it for yourself. And the athletes who want it for themselves are also the most successful in these performance programs and the most consistent. The athletes who are the least successful are the ones whose parents are the ones who want it for them. I've had parents fill out inquiries or get on consult calls with me and they're like, my daughter wants to improve speed. And then I'll look at the daughter and be like, is that what you want to improve? You want to improve speed? And they look at the parent and they're like, I don't know. And I'm like, well, I guess it wasn't you then. It was your parent who wants you to improve speed. So typically those are the clients who aren't as successful. But if I do take those people on, then sometimes I can shift the kid's attitude about it and help them to fall in love with it more and just enjoy that process of training. But it's very hard if it's really forced onto the kid by the parent for them to be successful.
That's funny. I did a contest a few months back where I offered to meet with five kids and their parents for free, just to just give them an assessment, basic video assessment, push them off the right direction. And about halfway through one of the calls, the daughter turns to the dad and says, "Can I talk to Don alone for a bit?" And so she walks outside and says, "How do I tell my dad that he's pushing me through this? I didn't even want to play after high school. I don't know where he got the idea, but I don't want to play in college. When I'm done with high school, I'm done." And so, man, you talk about heartbreaking. And I just like, I don't know. I guess you just have to be honest with your dad. And talked her through it, and she thanked me, and I'm assuming it got done okay. But it really made me realize that I think when I see all these social media accounts being run clearly by the parents, I mean, I got DMs from these kids' account where the parent says, "I know I'm running my kid's account," but the posts are, "I really enjoyed playing today," right? We had such a good time playing. It's always the same verbiage about thrilled to support my teammates, making that kid out to be like they are the perfect, they'd be the perfect teammate for a college coach to want to bring in, right? And it always seems to be the same verbiage, and it's clear that these are parents running their kids' account and posts being made while kids are probably in school, should be in school. And yeah, it just made me realize after that conversation and then assessing posts that I see online, how many parents seem to want this for their kids, maybe more than their kids want it for themselves.
Oh wow, Don, that's a crazy story, and it really made me think of just how much of a scam social media is, because so many people are lying about the truth, especially the parent-run accounts. I've seen that many times where parents will run a girl's account and talk about how much she loves being on her grind and how she enjoys going to these skill sessions with their private coach, and I've heard her say, like, "Hey, I don't really like doing this," or I've heard, "Oh, she's faking an injury so she doesn't have to go to practice. She's miserable." Like, I've heard crazy stuff like that. But then her social media account says otherwise, but it's her parents running it who are saying, "Oh, we're so happy over here. Like, she's thriving," when behind the scenes, she's really struggling and she's falling out of love with it.
Yeah, and we see this carry through into college, and we see it in quite a few ways. We saw it in Katie Myers at Stanford not that long ago, where clearly the public image wasn't what was going on inside herself when she took her own life. We see it in the transfer portal. I have come to believe that most of the kids that don't make it out of the transfer portal wanted to quit coming out of high school. They didn't even want to play in college. But how do you tell your parents? If you look at one of the posts I made this morning, it was a simple question: how much money are you spending? How much are your club fees? And one parent started breaking down the club fees and came up to between travel, club fees, uniform, coaches' fees, everything. It's about 12,000 a year, and then spending another 8 to 10,000 a year on their kid's private trainer. And so you realize it's coming close to 20,000 a year that this parent's spending. Now, if you're their child, how do you tell your parent that you've invested 60 to 80,000 in me over the last 4 years so I could play in college, but I don't want to play in college?
Yeah, I mean, it's not an easy conversation for any teenager, but I've heard girls eventually get the courage to do so because, they're in their junior or senior year and they're crunched for time and they have to make a yes or no, am I playing in college? And usually it's when they're upperclassmen, when they approach their parents and they're like, "This isn't for me." And it's a gut-wrenching conversation. I've heard stories in the past of, dads pushing college on girls, and they were soccer coaches themselves, so they thought their daughter wanted to do it. And then the daughter breaks the news that she doesn't want to play, and the dads are just, they're floored. And I think my advice for teenagers is maybe to have this conversation earlier when you are starting to get that inkling that you don't want to do this in college. You don't want it to go on for much longer when you're in so deep and you've done all the showcases junior year and then senior year, you're thinking about admissions. Like you kind of want to do it sooner than that, the moment you get that gut feeling, I don't want to do this. And I'll give you an example. I recently had a girl. She is, I think she's a freshman or sophomore in high school. And she was a decent soccer player, really great kid, great student, very passionate about film and wanted to go to film school. And she just broke the news to her parents, still fairly young, that she wanted to stop soccer. And she was, a little bit worried about it at first, but her parents were really supportive. They really were happy for her. But, at first, as a parent, you're like, oh, we have to leave our soccer parent friends. We can't watch her play soccer anymore. We can't, have that social life, which I get on the parent end. It becomes part of you. So of course they were really upset at first, but at the end of the day, they supported her because she found something that she was really passionate about and actually wants to stick to for the long haul. So now she's in the process of looking at amazing film schools, Florida State, SCAD. I mean, it's really cool. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. If your kid finds something they're excited about, then that's an amazing thing. Not a lot of people find their thing. So if your kid has that, even if it's not soccer, that's okay. And I keep getting asked the question, me and my husband, because we're planning to have kids in the next few years, newsflash, but everyone's like, well, Casey played professional baseball. I obviously played soccer, and everyone's like, well, are you guys gonna have like baseball and soccer stars? And I'm like, I don't care. I know how hard it is at these levels, and I know how much passion you have to have. I don't care what sport they do. I don't care what activity. It's like you just have to be passionate about it because I know that's what you need to be consistent with something. So, if they do golf or cheerleading, I don't care. Like as long as they love it. But I think it's so funny people ask that question because that's what we played, as if we're gonna push that on our kids. I honestly, it's like if they don't play soccer, I'm fine with it.
We always took the attitude when we had our kids is we just put them into almost everything. We just didn't want them sitting around playing video games and watching television all day long. So our daughter was dance, and then our son picked up music, and that was it for sports. Once he learned music and the guitar, and that was it. He was hooked on music, and our daughter got hooked on dance. And my one son played soccer, but I told him so many times, I really, if you don't want to do this, it's fine. Let me know. It's easier on my life. If you don't do this, we'll find something else. Because it's hard. It's really, really difficult driving your kids 2 hours one way to training and 2 hours the other way, and taking time out in the middle of the day. And it's very costly, and the costs are rising. It'd be much easier if you quit. To find whatever you want to do and are passionate about. And I try to tell parents that out of my experience is that just find what your kid makes your kid happy, and then encourage that. And then, by the way, if you want a good relationship with your kid, you become interested in that thing.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And especially like when we're talking about college sports, it's another 4 years. It's super competitive. And if you don't have that passion that lights you up for your sport, then it's going to be a very hard 4 years. Or if you pick the wrong school because you had these dreams of going at a certain school, it's just, yeah, it can really ruin those next 4 years because that's another period in your life. It's long. So you want to be really careful with that.
Yeah, I know you've got a hard out today in a few minutes. And one of the areas I wanted to touch on our podcast, it is the issue of genetics and what role that plays in making a top athlete. Because I know for myself and for my son, even more than me, I mean, I worked really hard as an athlete. And no matter how fit I was always the slowest guy on the team. And no matter how many miles I ran, no matter how many sprints I ran, there were certain players I could never beat, even though I know I worked harder than they were. And I really saw this in my son. He's about 14 years old. He started working at the certified sports conditioning specialist, and we talked about the fast twitch muscle fibers and how to develop and how to, and he worked his butt off, and he was still slower than a turtle towing a tractor. It didn't matter. I mean, it was great that he was a goalkeeper. It helped. But overall, even as a goalkeeper, it means you're slower off the line, sprinting out to certain balls. And it means that you can't strike a ball in the same way that another player with maybe faster twitch muscle fibers can strike a ball. And it just meant that he had a cap to him. There was a certain cap that after he did everything perfectly, he was always a little behind the pros, always a little bit behind. So tell us about, I think this is an important subject for parents to hear, because I know we want the best for our kids, and we know we want our kids to play at the highest levels possible. But that word possible is really important, because what's possible for one kid may not be possible for another kid. Physically may not be possible. No matter how hard we work, And if we do everything perfect, it still may not work out because of genetics.
I 100% agree, Don. And so the cool thing about performance training, speed, strength, and conditioning, anyone can improve, but anyone can improve based on their own baseline and genetics. So for example, with speed, if you're a high school freshman who's really slow, starting out at a 14 mile per hour, you probably will never be an 18, 19 mile per hour athlete, no matter how much work you put into it. You might be hanging around at 16, 16 and a half mile per hour, maybe getting close to 17. But I think athletes really need to realize that they shouldn't always compare to others around them. They should compare to themselves and who they were yesterday. So have you improved your speed for your from your own baseline when you first assessed with your strength coach or whoever? And really look at those numbers, because that counts as a win for you. But like you said, there's some players genetically, they are the most fast twitch, and they can maybe do speed training like every other season and still be beating everyone on the field just because they have genetics on their side, like Usain Bolt. And I'll give another example. I just took up Masters track, and I was running with Team USA a couple weeks ago in the 60 meter. And look, I'm not a track athlete, but when I played soccer, I was pretty fast for soccer. But at this meet, here I am up against track athletes and girls who were like just genetically like sprinters. They were like jacked and so powerful. And I trained hard for 6 months. I improved for myself and my own times. But when I got in those lanes next to them, they were strides ahead of me. And that was okay because I was new to this and they're track athletes and sprinters. I'm a soccer player over here. And I just kind of had to accept that. But, you know, looking back on the training journey, it's like you can still be proud of yourself if you improved. And I think that's what a lot of kids are missing, is they're not looking at the process. They're always looking at the outcome. And I think when you look so much at the outcome, you're more likely to just fall off. Or if like your outcome goal is not a deeper why, and it's just you're trying to improve a sprint time or go to college, then you're going to fall off pretty easily. But I think you need to really have that deeper why to why you're training. For me, training for this track meet was more about living optimally and becoming a very healthy person. I learned so much about training and different inputs in my body, sleep, and dialing in my nutrition more than I ever have. I mean, we got as serious as getting blood work done and doing DEXA scans, and like that was more important to me than like the race. Like I finally feel optimal. So that was more of my deeper why. But I just think people really need to fall in love with the process and just have a greater purpose in all this.
Yeah, I had a coach talk to me about this years ago, talking about athletes comparing themselves to others versus comparing themselves to themselves. So it's great that you bring up track athletes, and you hear this from athletes in individual sports like swimming. They talk about their personal best, and that's what they're comparing themselves to, their personal best. Did I improve today? Did I improve in this meet? Did I improve in this run? Is it my personal best that I can do, that I'm trying so hard to beat myself, to improve with myself? Because like you said, you know, probably never going to beat Usain Bolt ever, no matter what you do. You know, even Usain Bolt at this age is going to be faster than most collegiate athletes, you know, and that idea of the personal best, I'm really glad you brought that up, because I think that can apply to soccer, and soccer players can see that for themselves.
Yeah, and I'll add just one more thing here. Like, not everyone on a soccer team is going to be that fast outside midfielder. Maybe your role instead is being a center defensive mid, and you're very technical. You can distribute really well. You can hold your defensive position really well. I mean, I think people also need to think about their role on the team, and am I playing the right position based on my strengths? I've seen girls try to play outside mid and they're really slow. So you're probably not an outside mid. You might be useful elsewhere. So just thinking about things like that, I think, you know, that's the beauty of soccer. It's a team effort. Everyone has their strengths and brings their own talents. And it would be very boring if everyone were all the same.
That's a really good one. And that's a good note to leave on. I know you've got a heart out here right now. I know
that
you've
went
got
by
another
fast.
Meeting. Yeah, it did go by quickly. And I really appreciate you coming on with this. This will be a good episode. It didn't quite go the direction that I had thought, but I think we hit some really important points for parents and for players. And I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much, Don.
All right. Thanks, Erica. We'll talk to you soon.